9 a.m. Meeting is called to order. This is the Arizona Board of Chiropractic Examiners meeting on July 19th, 2022. Okay, let's continue the roll call.
Angela Powell?
Present.
Mr. Turbinson?
Present.
Okay. Let me recognize any new attendees. If you're newly licensed in the state of Arizona as a chiropractor, you need to attend one of these meetings. I know there's at least one new attendee here, and I'm sure we probably have some virtually. So you are required to stay on for at least the next 3 hours for our meeting. And thank you for attending. I hope that you'll find it informative and give you some insight as to how the board works and how you can stay away from being invited back. Okay. So let's go on now to our formal hearing, which is tab number one in the matter of Dr. Joseph Mayer. Hi, welcome.
Morning.
Morning. In the crusade of room, I'll stay right here.
Okay.
There are two preliminary matters.
Okay.
One of the preliminary matters is a motion to designate the record as confidential as far as the medical records go, because it was not feasible to redact 1,700 pages. So that will be the second thing that the board, I would love the board to consider. But first, you have a consent agreement in front of you, and the consent agreement is for a $10,000 civil penalty, a $5,000 investigative cost penalty. So the board can recoup some of the funds that it's lost over the last 3 or 4 years investigating this matter. I feel that this is a good agreement. It has finality. The board has expressed the fact that they did not want ongoing monitoring, that they wanted something that was going to be final. A consent agreement is also not appealable once it's signed. And I will say, and I'm not going to speak for Dr. Marr, but it is my understanding that, you know, this case is from 2018-2019. We have yet to have a complaint regarding these matters since then. We do not have a complainant who's coming forward, and we do not have any of the listed patients whose files were reviewed coming forward, except in favor of the doctor. So I would just really request that the board consider this, and take the time to discuss it with Mr. Plumson and his client.
Okay. So board members, you all looked at and saw the consent agreement. The consent agreement is disciplinary, but it is not a revocation, which we would do. It is not a voluntary surrender of licensure. I think that you had expressed that you're looking to retire soon. Is that the...
At the time that we met with the board and up until about 2 weeks ago, that was the intent.
Okay.
At this point in time, it's in flux. Dr. Mayer was in the process, I believe, of selling her practice.
Trying to, but it fell through.
But it fell through. Okay. So I can't, in good conscience, say to the board, it's an absolute. I think that is still the intent at some point in time in the future. But because the sale fell through, I can't say to the board that there is a date certain.
Okay. Thank you. So board members, do you have any specific questions about the consent agreement?
I have a couple of questions with regard to dates. What was the date of the consent agreement?
That it was signed?
That was submitted for our consideration. I want to just confirm the date that we received that consent agreement.
I provided it to you on Monday.
Okay. And that, I really actually would like a number of dates.
A date? Oh,
7/18
of 2022.
Okay. And we also are in receipt of a letter in response from Dr. Maher recently. What is the date of that letter? So many documents in here that I'm having.
It was received and provided on 7/14 of 2022.
7/14. Dr. Maher, the letter that we received from you on 7/14, do you still stand by everything that you said in that letter, and specifically that you never had any intent to defraud or mislead you or anything of that particular nature?
I do.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, there's some proven evidence, as far as I'm concerned, that Dr. Maher did, in fact, intend to defraud and mislead and misinterpret. And now he's, again, confirming that he said that he didn't. And I'm not comfortable accepting a consent agreement that, based upon those circumstances, when there's compelling evidence to the contrary.
Okay. Other board members, thoughts? So what's on the table right now is we can vote and agree on the consent agreement in lieu of the formal hearing that we're about to get into, if you think it satisfies what we need to accomplish today. If you don't think it goes far enough, then we're going to continue with the formal hearing.
My understanding today is that the consent agreement is not even agreeable to the other parties involved. So I guess my question
I have a signed consent. And I don't mean to interrupt, Dr. Knopf. May I make a comment?
Sure.
Okay. In terms of the consent agreement, we have attempted on a number of occasions to get a consent to agree to whatever the board would like. At the last meeting that we had and the consent was rejected, there were two or three comments made. One was that we had the opportunity to meet informally, which we did with Dr. Guarino and with Ms. Vanderveen. And also the Attorney General, and attempt to hash out an agreement. The result, this particular consent agreement, was not us submitting to the board in terms of these are our terms and conditions. This was a consent agreement that was submitted to us by the Attorney General in an attempt to satisfy the board's concerns and to attempt to bring finality to the case. And so, you know, if the board is believing or thinks that we did this or attempted to do this as an avoidance of any kind, that's not the case. We were submitted this agreement. We looked over the agreement. We discussed the pluses and the minuses. We discussed what could happen or not happen. And came to an agreement that yes, we would sign the agreement. But again, I don't want the board to have the impression that these are our terms and conditions. These were terms and conditions that were presented to us by the board or by the board's representative. And again, Seamus and I have had a number of conversations, so it's not. I'm not trying to say that he did this on his own or anything. We did have a number of conversations, but we made no changes to it, and we accepted the terms and conditions. So with respect to the board accepting, rejecting, or otherwise, I would urge the board to accept it simply because it does bring finality and because certainly Dr. Mayer understands what occurred, how it occurred, and has taken steps to correct things within his own office as far as billing, record keeping. But I would also like to point out to the board that, you know, going forward or otherwise, the complainant is a disgruntled ex-employee. As documents for this hearing, we submitted, his personnel file and notes that were put in his file to indicate what motivation he might have had for filing the complaint. We also submitted letters from patients. The files that you have in front of you, the 11 files, several of those patients were willing to write letters and say, we have no complaint whatsoever. And the one that was of particular emphasis, the last meeting we were at, with respect to the young child, the mother was more than happy to write a letter saying that she was very happy with the services we were going to have her here as a witness today, but her employment would not allow that to happen in terms of we didn't want to cause any detriment to her day. So we did submit the letter, but there are other items that, in terms of her satisfaction and her requesting a lot of the treatment, we recognized that there were deficiencies in records. We recognized there were deficiencies in the billings. We believe those have been taken care of. And so, again, I would urge the board to seriously consider accepting this consent as an agreement that we all have come to, perhaps not Dr. Bennett, with all due respect, but we've come to an agreement with the board after several discussions, and I think this ends in the culmination of it. It does add some finality and allows us to move forward.
Thank you. Okay, and just by way of context, you know, there were all kinds of things considered when this was being formulated and discussed, and on the table was the desire to retire, and we had discussed how do you put somebody potentially on probation and or consider if they were required to do record audits and record and billing audits over the course of the next couple of years, like we might do in a case like this. We wouldn't want to have an unenforceable probationary order with somebody who is trying to retire that might end up lingering for a decade or two. So that was discussed. And I believe that the possibility of a voluntary surrender was rejected. And that's why it's not in this order. And so that's the context with how this evolved to this point. I specifically said that I do not speak for the board members when we had this discussion, and so anything goes right now as far as if you think this is far-reaching enough. If you don't, we have all the regular options of a formal hearing.
And you also have the option to modify the agreement with them if there is something that you could get to, if you choose to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Powell.
If I may, please make just a couple of comments. It's not that anyone felt, I don't think, that the patients weren't happy with care. What concerned me was the care plans that cost over $50,000. And in those beautiful letters that the patients wrote, I'm reading, perhaps between the lines, that none of them are paying anything. And so, of course, they're very happy. They're referring all of their family, all of their friends. Everyone's coming to Dr. Mayer for care, and nobody's responsible to pay anything. I didn't see any payment records from anyone. And the that type of practice is my concern. It's not so much that whether he's a good doctor or not, or that they're happy or not happy with care, but that's a concern. I didn't hear anything from Dr. Mayer about tempering the way that he treats patients and the number of the dollars of the care plans, the number of visits. That was excessive in anybody's book, it seemed to me. Also, there's clearly fraud when you talk about the number of visits and the patients that he saw and the one-year-old that the mother's very happy with the treatment. Okay, that doesn't negate the fact that he documented therapeutic exercises for a one-year-old. That's crazy. So those are the kinds of concerns that I think we still have with regard to, and also because he did say he was going to retire, we kind of played all that down, but I think it needs to be given its due.
Okay, so Ms. Powell, the question is, do you want to continue with the formal hearing, or do you think that we can get to an agreement with this consent agreement at this time?
I think the consent agreement needs to be modified so that it specifically states whether he's going to voluntarily surrender his license or retire, but there needs to be something more than him walking away without consequences to continue to practice in the method or in the way that he's been practicing.
Okay. So you feel strongly that a voluntary surrender would be part of that agreement and he would be done practicing?
I do.
Okay. Other board members?
Mr. Chairman, if I may make a couple of comments.
Yes.
With regard to Ms. Morris's comments in particular, generally speaking, I was in concurrence with the nature of the proposed consent agreement, with the exception of licensure we had the discussion, which was prior to me reading the letter of 714 that Dr. Maher provided for us. It was the content of that letter, and specifically the fact that he denied adamantly any intent to defraud, and then sort of laid off, and kind of casually referring to documentation issues. The documentation issues in this case are marginally, if minimally important. There are other far more egregious issues. And then the attempt to lay off the causation of these events to an employee that was in employment for a period of 3 months. And so just to check the veracity of the possibility of that complaint, I went back and reviewed. I took just the first 10 of the many patients that files that we reviewed, and each and every one of those patients had documentation of egregious offenses prior to and after the dates of this employment. So I look at this communication as an attempt to beg off and take no responsibility for the very serious charges that are here. And that happened a week ago. So I'm not prepared to accept anything that does not involve a surrender. This behavior is a threat to the public and it needs to be stopped.
Okay. So, Mr. Turbinson, any thoughts?
I guess one response to Dr. Fettig is the consent order does set forth, it conflicts with the letter, but he's agreeing to sign the consent that does have findings of fact that say I billed for treatment essentially that wasn't provided and does say that. So I'm less concerned by the letter than because he's now admitting to this in a public document that's going to be out there. So I have a little less concern about that. I do think the retirement is a new factor that makes it a little more difficult to accept the consent.
As I see it, that's the key issue. Nothing short of surrendered license would be acceptable to me.
Okay. And I want to hear Dr. Knopf's comments, and then I think we need to make a decision if we're going to continue in the negotiation to go on with the formal hearing.
The issue of retirement is obviously what throws the wrench in this for me. To have finality would mean to not be practicing any further, because that was the intent of retirement, and from what I understand, this consent agreement. I'm hesitant on suspension. I would entertain a period of probation with record audits, which I believe we entertained previously in a consent agreement. That's where I'm at right now.
Okay, so for you, voluntary surrender is not a necessary component. You would consider putting on probation and having record audits.
Correct.
Okay.
And I agree with that.
Okay. Well, so you've heard two board members say that they would give them a chance to go through record audits, and you've heard two boarders say that a voluntary surrender is a key component of this. And so as the third board member, I'm going to say I also agree that a voluntary surrender is a key component of this. And so if he's willing to voluntarily surrender his license in a consent agreement, then I think we're going to move forward and consider that today. And if not, then we're going to continue with the formal hearing. So what would you like to say to that?
Well, I would like to say that certainly if we wanted to add the component of audits and certainly review, if the only option is voluntary surrender, I would like to talk to my client out in the hall, but my belief is that is not acceptable. It seems as though going through a hearing to reach the same result that three board members have already expressed, I'm not sure is worth the time of the board, but I would like to talk to my client. If the board members would consider whether it be Ms. Powell or Dr. Garino or Dr. Bennett, audits on a fairly frequent basis with emphasis towards billing and record keeping, I can tell you, and we were prepared to tell you, that Dr. Mayer has started, not started, but he's been using electronic health records. He's been meeting with his office manager every Friday to go over the bills and to make sure that the records are consistent with the bills, which is one of the complaints that's in front of the board. And certainly would welcome anybody who wants to come in and audit. Obviously, it has to be approved by the board, the auditor. I think that the surrender of a license or revocation of a license is a severe penalty, given Dr. Mayer's history in the state and given client satisfaction, patient satisfaction, and given that there's been no even insurance company complaints. So given that, if the board would reconsider their position as far as probation and audits, we certainly would find that acceptable. If the board is completely immovable on that issue, then I suspect we will go forward, but I'd like to take a minute to talk to my client.
Okay, well, let's take a five-minute recess, and you can meet in the hall if you like, and then come on back in when you're ready.
All right, thank you.
Hi.
Hello.
So there's one additional option that could happen, and we'd have to discuss if board members think this is appropriate or not. But what about a state order of revocation, meaning a probationary order that would require record audits and give them a chance to demonstrate billing and record compliance? And if he fails those audits, it becomes an effective revocation.
Settlement agreement at this point in time is off the table, correct?
As written.
As written. And we would probably agree to that, but perhaps with the financial part of it being absent, because we're going to have to pay for audits and hire the person to come in and do the audits, and so there is a financial burden there as well that you're imposing.
Okay. Did you want to tell us what, if you came to any agreement out in the hallway?
Well, what I was going to ask you the same thing. If any of the board members had changed their position, given that we would be willing to go through a probationary period with frequent audits to assure the board that Dr. Mayer is practicing without intent to defraud and with obviously taking more care with the records and the documentation and the medical necessity.
We didn't have any further discussion on that. But I'll ask Ms. Powell, what are your thoughts on that? Are you still moving down the path of a summary suspension needs to be part of that consent agreement? She's muted. Ms. Powell, can you unmute, please? Hi, we still can't hear you.
There you go. How's that? Good?
Yep, I got you now.
Okay. I would consider being a little bit more flexible in that direction, except that for me it's not so much the medical record keeping and documentation as it is the care of the patients, the excessive care that the patients are receiving. When we talk about putting them on probation, doctor, I'm talking about you get real about treatment plans for one-year-olds, and you know, I don't care how happy patients are, I want to see more reasonable treatment for the proposed diagnoses for these patients, not hundreds of visits and $50,000 later. So it's not just the documentation, but it's also the care, and I have concerns about that. Any comments?
Can that not be written into the audit portion of the review?
It could be.
Yeah.
I would definitely want that stipulated. So that's my take on it.
Thank you, Ms. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm in complete agreement with Ms. Powell. The issue is only, as she has said and as I have said multiple times, the documentation and record keeping there are problems with it, but they are trivial compared to these treatment plans, and specifically with regard to, for example, a letter written to United Healthcare on April the 4th, 2018, that talks about using a benchmark for medical necessity that was could only be contrived as a knowing effort to defraud. This outcome assessment, which we questioned Dr. Maher about, and as I recall, when I asked him where he learned it was from a Steve Singer seminar decades ago, that's not where this came from. This tool that is being used to convince people that patients are making progress over treatment plans that exceed 200 visits, and then no evidence fall within normal treatment plans for short treatment plans. This instrument can only have been intended. Number one, could only be created by someone who knew what they were doing, and number two, only be intended to defraud. And here's a letter that we have specifically doing that. And so the issue here is not records. The issue here is that there is a style of care here that has that unfortunately when members of our profession have gone to the insurer industry in an effort to defend chiropractic benefits to the public, the ongoing statement, and more than one person in this room has heard this, that, well, there's a small population of providers that are defrauding the public, and therefore we are not able to give chiropractors the freedom and practice that you're asking for. And this is an example of that very thing. This behavior is not just harming the patients. This behavior is harming the profession and the patients that we treat and have been doing so for years. And so this is egregious. And, you know, I would be hard-pressed to agree to a state revocation, and I would only agree to it in the event that I could be assured, that we could be assured, that this kind of behavior stops. Period.
Well, and if I may, certainly you have input into who the auditor is, and you have input into what parameters the auditor is to be looking at concerning the records and the treatment.
Okay.
I guess my only question is if we go down the path of audit and probation, let's say he does make sale of the practice and pursues retirement, do the audits just stop and that's an assumed fail because the audit isn't completed, and then we can move forward with revocation? Or he could come back before the board and discuss it with them to retire. There's a lot of different ways you can handle it.
I mean, if he retires having passed the audits, I don't think that comes into play. If he retires having failed the audits, then perhaps.
Right. And then it would just be a case for violation of that board order, which is much simpler, straightforward.
And if I may add to the reduction in with the monetary penalty, I disagree with the proposal reducing it. I think that these are pennies compared to the amount of money that has been kind of inappropriately obtained as a result of this behavior.
Okay. Well, now 9:40. We've spent the first 40 minutes of this meeting discussing a consent agreement negotiation. It's time for us to make a decision on this and decide if we're going to continue down that path or if we're going to get into this formal hearing. So you've heard, Mr. Morrison, what's at stake here. We're not talking about reducing the time frame for these monetary penalties that are in the original consent agreement order. We're talking about a potentially probationary period of probably 2 years, where he's going to have to pay for auditors to monitor his records and billing and treatment care plans. Are we in agreement with that, board members?
I would make the comment, Mr. Chairman, that the intensity of the audit be specifically identified if we were going to consider this.
Right.
The intensity of the audit be identified so that it occurs within the next 3 to 6 months with a reduced titration of audits for the remainder of the probationary period.
He's got to hear this.
Okay. And then also this is, you know, as I discussed earlier, you know, this is a state revocation order.
My only comment, Dr. Bennett, to your recommendation, I would have lessened over time, I think, having regular intervals saying quarterly. That way, you know, we keep a consistent watch on records throughout the entire probationary.
And technically, I agree. Thank you. And technically, in terms of technicality, are we able to identify the sample size that is harvested in this audit and the random nature of the record selection? How are we able to control which records are looked at?
You can put it into the order. How many? Which records? You know, how many at each interval? Specifically, you know, what records do you want to look at?
Okay, and before I ask my members if that's agreeable, Mr. Morrison, is that agreeable to your client?
Yes.
Okay.
The only request I would make is to perhaps extend the period for the $15,000 to be paid. That's pretty hefty. Even given Dr. Bennett's comments, that's a pretty hefty sum. I would say for the invest, I think it was broken down into $5,000 for investigation and $10,000 as a fine. I would say the $5,000 could probably be paid within 30 days, let's say, to satisfy the board. And then the additional $10,000 maybe in two additional payments, one within 60 days and one within 120, something like that.
What say you?
I think that, excuse me, Mr. Chairman, I think that he should pay half of it up front right away, then work out the terms for the remaining balance. Also, with regard to the audits, the monitors will select those files randomly. I've done audits for doctors in other states, and that's usually the way the auditors or monitors do that. And there should be some emphasis written into this agreement with regard to the medical necessity for care based on the patient's diagnosis.
Okay, so Ms. Powell, there's a $10,000 fine, civil penalty, and there's a $5,000 cost of investigation. Which part of that did you want paid up front? Half?
Half of it, yes.
Half of the 10 or the 5 or both?
Half of both.
$7,500 and the balance for
payments. Still within 30 days, though. I mean, I don't think he's going to write the check as he walks out of here today.
Within 30 days.
Yeah. And then let's say $7,500 and split the difference 75 days.
If that's acceptable to the rest of the board.
All right. So I think I need a motion from a board member to.
Not there.
Pardon me?
So there's a lot there.
Yeah.
Would this be a motion to consider a consent agreement or to offer a consent agreement?
It would be to offer since they did agree to it. So.
All right.
Board Chair, Dr. Green, yeah. I'm a member of the board. I'm Mimi Cody. I'm the board's independent advisor on this matter. Mr. Monahan is correct. It would be a motion to offer a consent agreement, to offer the proposed consent agreement with the following revisions. But I would also recommend you include in your motion a tight deadline for the respondent to sign it, whether it be by end of business today or end of the week. So
I think the answer to that is how long it would take to get written up.
I can
you can? Okay.
I'll send it tonight.
Okay. I'll make sure that Dr. Mayer gets it tomorrow, And let's see, today is Tuesday, Wednesday. I think by Monday. By Monday, is will that satisfy the board?
Fine.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we offer the proposed consent agreement with the following revisions. First off, that a state revocation be put in place for a period of 2 years during which there'll be a probationary status. Violation of any portion of this consent agreement will result in immediate revocation. That the $15,000 penalty in the form of a $5,000 board expense and a $10,000 what would that term be, a civil penalty be imposed and compensated or paid back to the board on the following terms: $7,500 within 30 days and the remaining $7,500 within 75 days, with the stipulation that this consent agreement be signed by the end of the day today.
By Monday.
Yeah.
Did you want to add in there the 2 year period and the number of audits, the emphasis on medical necessity?
Yes, I'm sorry, I omitted that portion. During the probationary period, audits will be performed on a minimum of 25 randomly selected records on a quarterly basis, with a specific emphasis on medical necessity and standard of care case management.
Okay, is there a second?
Oh, second.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and call for the question. Do we need to do a roll call vote on this?
Dr. Garino?
Aye.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
She's muted. Yep, got it. Thanks.
Mr. Turpin says?
Aye.
Okay, five ayes have it. You've heard what we've agreed to do today. Thank you, and that concludes your presentation.
Thank you.
Would the board please make a motion to vacate the formal hearing for a day?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we vacate the formal hearing.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? Okay, we're vacated.
May I request that tab 9 be heard, please?
Thank you.
We're gonna take a couple out of order, and then we'll come back to 9 for you.
Oh, okay.
All right. So, board members, we're going to go to tab number 4 right now, which is a matter of Charles Kevin Schmidt. Hi, Ms. Carter.
Hi. Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm well.
Do we have Dr. Schmidt?
Since we signed a consent agreement, Dr. Stearns is not present this morning.
So before you, you do have a signed disciplinary consent agreement for an order of probation. It's 6 hours in record keeping, and and then there's also 6 hours for boundaries and ethics specific to the female patient.
Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to say before we consider?
Sure. Just briefly, as the board is aware, this matter came before you at your June meeting. At that time, Dr. Stearns was not represented by counsel. I shortly thereafter got involved and reached out to the board about a possible resolution that would allow the board to recognize that the Dr. Stearns understands that perhaps something was misinterpreted by the patient and that there are things he could do better in the future when dealing with future female patients to make sure that something like that doesn't happen. This allows the board to make sure that he's aware of that. He's taken a complaint from a member of the public and one of his patients seriously, and that he is willing, obviously, to learn from this opportunity I think the board has identified a good course for that particular issue and situation, the special populations and chiropractic and the female patient, because there was also something identified with respect to the record keeping for this particular patient as well. That became part of the agreement also. Dr. Sturmitz is obviously willing to comply and will register for those courses as soon as possible, and we would ask that the board approve the consent agreement in its current form.
Okay, so board members, this is a formal interview item. Do you feel like the consent agreement goes far enough and satisfies our what we need to do to protect the public in this case? Or do you want to go ahead with the formal interview?
Chairman, I believe that I believe this is a good path to follow.
I would agree.
Okay. Okay. Ms. Powell?
I agree.
Okay. Well, then I need a motion to accept and adopt the consent agreement.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept and adopt the consent agreement as proposed for Dr. Sturmitz.
I'll second.
Okay, second by Dr. Knopf. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, we have five ayes that have it.
Thank you.
So we have a motion to vacate formal interview as well. I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, those in favor of vacating the formal interview signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay. So we're done with tab number four, and we're going to go out of order again to tab number seven, which is an initial action on complaint for Sean Malone. And is Dr. Malone here?
Dr. Malone is not present. Due to similar reasons, plus an additional one, I believe he's recently in the process of relocating. But also we have entered into a consent agreement with the board. It is non-disciplinary, but provides for continuing education. And as a reminder, this dealt with a patient that was seen in late 2020, but then filed a complaint in November of 2021 relating to her feeling uncomfortable about comments that he had made regarding tattoos that she had on her chest. There certainly wasn't any intent to make her feel uncomfortable with said comments, but again, one can never be too careful, especially in present day and age, and that's why he was willing to enter into a consent agreement for 3 hours of continuing education with patient boundaries and ethics. No prior or similar complaints, but again, a good documentation that the concern was heard and that obviously needs to be more cautious when interacting with female patients. And we believe that this would be an appropriate and agreed upon resolution of this matter and would ask that the board approve the consent agreement.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment?
Yes.
I would like, just for the record and for the benefit of perhaps new licensees that are attending, to state that in this case, the presence of quite good record keeping made us able to evaluate what really probably did happen in the treatment room. And I just would like people to pay attention that there is a positive advantage to good record keeping. And I also, I believe that this is also a good path forward with regard to resolving this complaint, and we move that we accept the consent agreement as submitted.
I second the motion.
For comments, do we have the patient here?
She was not. We've had difficulty getting a hold of her, and we reached out and tried to talk to her yesterday, and still we're not able to do that.
Okay. Any other comments? Discussion. Okay, I'm going to call for the question to adopt the consent agreement. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, hearing none, the agreement is accepted.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you for considering them out of order.
Okay.
Have a great day.
All right. Okay. Mr. Morrison? We'll go to tab number nine now. matter of Dr. Andrew Altman.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Ms. Powell.
I'll need to recuse myself in this case.
Okay. Hello.
Good morning. Dave Morrison, representing Dr. Altman.
Okay. Ms. Vanderveen?
Before you, you have a memo from our board investigator, Mr. Dominic. We've been trying to contact the detective and the Maricopa County Attorney's Office, and at this point in time, they're still reviewing the file, but nothing has moved forward. So we're requesting that you either potentially stay in the matter or dismiss the matter with prejudice, and once charges are brought, we can bring this matter back before you, but kind of close this out so the clock stops still running in our regards, but we'll continue to monitor. And once we have a case or something happens or if the case is dismissed, we'll be done with it.
Okay. Mr. Morrison.
We would like to urge the board to dismiss the matter. There's really no threat to the board or to the public. We've been in front of the board before and discussed how we've remediated the issue, which was lack of written consent and lack of notice. Signs have been posted. Written consent is obtained on every patient. That's number one. Number two is if the board is concerned about keeping monitoring this particular situation, this particular case should be dismissed. The complainant, has, my understanding, has passed. And so even if the criminal matter were to go forward, this particular patient would not be participating in the process. That's number two. Number three is, with respect to the board's concern of keeping and monitoring the situation, it's been over 2 years. Dr. Altman has never been charged. We believe there's just insufficient evidence and they're never going to charge him. But that doesn't mean that he should continue to have a matter pending in front of this board. The other thing that the board could certainly be, or at least feel that they're going to be informed, is if he does get charged, he's required to report that to the board within 10 days. And so certainly if something does happen or the county attorney does decide to go forward, this board will certainly be made aware of it. And so for all those reasons, we'd ask the board to dismiss.
Yes, Dr. Bennett.
I have a question by point of clarification. With regard to options with and without prejudice, both for my application and for the record, what are our options there?
For dismissal with prejudice, just means any new evidence that comes up, you can bring, or not even new evidence, I apologize. If the case does go to, adjudication, then that's when you would be able to use that. Your without prejudice, it just allows you to bring the case back to the board with new information or a conviction. In this setting, I don't even know if it would be appropriate to dismiss with prejudice. I don't know if it would have much legal bearing. So.
Okay, board members, what's your pleasure?
For me, knowing that it should be reported, should any charges occur, I would be in favor of dismissing it.
I agree. Dismissing without prejudice.
Ms. Powell?
She's recused.
Oh, sorry.
I would comment, Mr. Chairman, that, for the record, there were serious allegations made, but there has been so far, despite heroic efforts on the part of our board to obtain that information, we have been unable to. And in the absence of any kind of significant evidence, keeping this doctor under the pressure of this accusation is without merit. And so I would also support the dismissing without prejudice.
Okay. Is a motion?
I'll make the motion to dismiss without prejudice.
I'll second.
Okay, we got a first by Dr. Knopf, second by Dr. Bennett. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have four ayes and one recused. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Now we go back in time to tab number two with Dr. Billy Barefoot, and that is a formal interview.
That is, we do have, well, Dr. Barefoot has declined to participate in the formal interview, and as such is not here. So I think the first thing we need to do is his complaints and the witnesses that we were going to bring forward to address this matter, if we could release them from attending, and then if we could move to tab 10, which is just kind of where you'd like to go from here regarding this matter.
Okay, and so, you know, when you, we have many phases of investigation, and when we get to the point of formal interview, that's the place where we can take disciplinary action. It is the right of the respondent to decline to participate. It doesn't mean that we dismiss the case. It means that it continues on down the path, but for today, Dr. Barefoot is not here, and it's his right to not be here. So, do we need to vacate?
Since he did not accept.
Okay. Okay. All right. So we're moving on then from tab number two to tab number 10, which is also Dr. Billy Barefoot under previously before the board.
So we provided a memo related to this that he was declining, and that perhaps one of the options for the board is to continue the investigation and do an interim order for a psychosexual evaluation, since we can't bring forward those witnesses, but we need to get down to the crux of what's occurring here and why these complaints keep coming before the board.
So that the investigation would continue, and we would get a professional evaluation on him for a psychosexual evaluation.
Yes.
And that is not because he's not here today. That's because the board needs evidence for his case.
And just if I'm remembering correctly, I believe we had also issued the EBAT.
He's
passed previously.
Correct.
And the psychosexual eval will be much more comprehensive.
Mr. Chairman, I recall in my early days as a board member, we had a training with regard to addictive type behavior and recidivism rates and concerns relative to the fact that when there's a trend of repeat offense, or the probability of increased number of offenses progresses almost exponentially, and I would feel that as a board, given the history of continuing issues, we would be remiss were we not to move forward with regard to a psychosexual evaluation in this case.
Agreed. So we need a motion for that.
I would move that we continue with our formal hearing as previously
Continue the investigation,
yes, thank you.
To order an interim order for psychosexual eval.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Thank you. And how long? Right,
90 days.
Yeah, 90 days. Yeah.
Okay, is there a second?
I second the motion.
Okay, Ms. Powell, your audio time delay put you behind Dr. Johnson.
Well, darn.
So I'll call for the question. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay. So we are done with tab number 10, and we are going back up to the formal interview number 3, tab 3, with Herbert Schillerstorm.
I believe he's appearing with his attorney via Zoom.
Yes, we're here. Can you hear us?
I do. Hello. Welcome. Okay. Give me just a moment.
I do want to note for the record that Attorney Greer is Mr. Greer, not Dr. Greer.
Thank you.
No relation?
I don't think so.
Okay. This is the time and place for formal interview in the matter of Dr. Herbert Schillerstrom. This is case number 2020-036 and 2022-002. The matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it by ARS 32-924F. Dr. Schillerstrom, please introduce yourself for the audio record.
Yes, hi. I'm Dr. Herb Schillerstrom.
Okay. And you are represented by legal counsel. Can you please introduce yourself for the record?
Yeah, my name is Joshua Greer.
All right, welcome. Dr. Schillerstrom, you have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this formal interview. Those options include dismissal, issuing a non-disciplinary advisory letter, issuing a disciplinary letter of concern, censure, restitution, placing your license on probation, assessing a civil penalty, or referring this matter to a formal hearing. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. Board members have read the materials. If you have any additional materials that you would like to present to the board, this is your chance to do so now. During the course of this interview, if it is necessary to refer to a patient, please use initials only. Do you have any additional materials?
We submitted some additional materials. Actually, I think they were materials that were submitted in October, but I don't think the board had in its file. We submitted them last week. Has the board received those?
We did. We have patient records on patient SE and patient AS. Looks like 128 pages.
Thank you. No additional records.
Okay. Thank you. The purpose of this formal interview is to inquire into the, oh, sorry, backing up here. This proceeding is being recorded by a court reporter. As a result, it is important that everyone speaks loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. I'm going to ask the board members and staff to introduce themselves for the record, and we'll start over here.
Brian Dominic, the investigator for the board.
Alyssa Vanderveen, executive director for the board.
Seamus Monahan, assistant attorney general.
Connie Gillum, licensing and operations coordinator for the board.
Dr. Wayne Bennett, vice chair.
Dr. Richard Guarino, chairman.
Dr. Stephen Knopf, professional member. Finch Turbinson, public member.
Angela Powell, public member.
Okay. I'm going to ask that witnesses be sworn in by our court reporter at this time.
Raise your right hand, please. You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Yes.
Thank you. We will begin by asking the board's executive director to give a brief summary of the allegations in this case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Ms. Vanderveen, can you please give us a summary of the case?
Non-compliance with the board order, non-compliance with the board subpoena, practicing while license is suspended, improper billing, and failure to maintain adequate records.
Thank you. So, Dr. Schillerstrom, what would you like to say in response to that? We've read all the materials, but if you have anything additional or if you'd like to make an opening statement, you can do so now.
No, I'll just answer questions concerning the matters.
Okay. Board members, do you have any specific questions for Dr. Schillerstrom? We have two cases, so... the first case was more regarding the noncompliance. All the fees have been paid, correct? He just did it on his own timeline and violated the board order that way, but eventually paid the $5,000 in fees, correct?
Yes. The entire penalty was paid in full. However, he did not sign the consent agreement that you offered him, and he continued to just pay at the $200 a month instead of what the board had ordered him.
Okay. Any claim financial hardship to that point?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So, board members, questions for Dr. Dr. Schiller's form. Start with Dr. Knopf.
I do not at this time.
Okay. Ms. Powell, any questions?
No, I have no questions, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Dr. Bennett?
I have a technical question. Is it Schiller-Strom or Schiller-Storm?
Schiller-Strom, sir.
Thank you. Okay. No, I have no questions beyond that.
Okay. This will be a quick meeting then.
We have yet to deal with the record keeping aspect, right?
Well, this is your chance.
Oh, I thought we were dealing more with the logistics of the
board order.
Board order.
No, well, these are both combined, so you can talk about both in the same.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, then yes.
If you have anything to discuss about violating the board order, which you may not, other than it's violated.
That's right. I believe that the board order was violated. I think it is clear that it was, and I'm ready at any point in time to talk about record keeping issues.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the record keeping issue.
Dr. Schellstrom, this is Wayne Bennett, Dr. Bennett speaking, and I'm spending some time with the records that you submitted for SE and AS. And starting with SE, I note that in your initial examination of this patient, you made a narrative description and you identified multiple orthopedic tests with the statement that the tests were positive. Is that correct?
Would you repeat that again, please, sir?
Mr. Bennett, could you speak up? We're having trouble hearing you.
I certainly will.
Thank you.
I've rarely been accused of speaking too softly. So on the initial evaluation of patient SE, I'm reviewing Dr. Schillerstrom's narrative description, which apparently is all that we have relative to his examination. Well, no, that's not true. We do have a form. And in it, he says that orthopedic tests were positive. And then in looking at the examination forms, he says orthopedic tests were positive. Without further clarification other than that they were positive. Is that consistent with your understanding of the record, sir?
Yes. I'm looking at the records right now on SE, and I'm looking here at the positive orthopedic test here on the right-hand side column, plus there was some in the middle column, sir.
Yes, sir. And I will be asking about those. Are you familiar with the document I'm talking about? It's the handwritten document, the initial. That's part of the question. It does not appear to be dated, and so I don't know what its date is, but it does say all care was necessary through 2017-21 to reach and maintain medically stationary status. So was this a document that was written after the course of care?
Yes, sir. The medical directive was written after the course of care. Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. So now directing your attention, if I may, to your examination of this patient, I'm looking at your examination form, which I have to confess I had a great deal of difficulty reading. But on this exam of 10-1-20, I note under your palpatory findings that every muscle in the spine and every muscle in both shoulders were identified as being tender. All of the spinal tests that were performed standing and prone were positive with no detail as to whether or not what positive means, while none of the tests below in this column, which by the way include standing tests and very common tests like Becquerel's and Valsalva, were not positive at all. Is that consistent with your understanding of what this record contains?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Okay. Would you agree that this is an extremely unusual clinical presentation for a patient?
I've talked to Dr. Friedman about my notes and stuff, and I had spoken to him concerning some of the things. I think Daniel or Dr. Friedman has a class called GOT documentation, because I will admit there needs to be some improvement here on these records. and I spoke to him about it, and he thought that I could use some improvement here on my medical records to do a better job documenting things and improving here my format. And showing that. Yes, sir.
What I'm hearing you say is that you are saying that maybe your record keeping wasn't really up to snuff at this point in time. Is that correct?
Yes, it could be done better. I could learn better to do it better. Yes, sir.
Okay, and I agree with you. However, that's not my question. The exam findings that you did document in your on your exam form, you did in this record document specific examination findings and palpatory findings. You left other areas blank, suggesting you either did not perform the test or that it was negative. But my point is that what you did identify as being positive and therefore documenting the necessity of medical necessity of care I've reviewed thousands of records, Doctor, and I candidly have to tell you I've never seen a bizarre exam finding like this. And so are you saying that this is not an accurate, did you not, I'm trying to figure out what went on here. Were you just sort of lazy in your paperwork, or did you not perform the exam and just fill it in? What happened here?
No, I performed the exam, and when I would do the palpation, the patient's, or this patient here, complained of pain in this area, and I asked him on a level of, what level of tenderness, tightness, if he was in extreme pain, what was going on, and he told me that he would give it a level of like 1 out of like 5 being the worst, and level 1 being tenderness and soreness that he expressed. So I could have did a better job explaining that here, and maybe that should have been put in here on the chart better for the grading of the patient's pain level or palpable percussed tenderness and whatnot going on.
Thank you. I also note that you identified 4 chief complaints on your form, and to the left of each of those chief complaints on your initial exam form, you put the number 8. What does that mean, sir?
Okay. You're then going to the actual progress note sheets, and those are the actual subjective findings from the patient. When I ask the patient, what is your level of tenderness, tightness, pain, discomfort level, and this is on date of service here, the first one, 10-1 of 2020, the patient told me he had a level of 8 that was very severe.
So this would be a 0 to 10 visual analog pain scale rating, is that correct?
Yes, sir, yes.
Okay. And then on the same form, the entire, I could not find anywhere else in your record any other history that you took other than what are summarized in 2 handwritten lines, which I could not read. So my question to you is there some other history that was taken? And if not, do you consider this an adequate history for a patient who's been injured in a motor vehicle accident and then presented with these bizarre and significant findings?
Are you going back to the exam page of 10-1 of 2020? Where basically patient history and symptomatology, there's a small paragraph down at the bottom of the page, doctor?
I am, yes.
Okay. I didn't list any patient history previously because I'd asked them if they'd had any significant injuries, anything in the past, any previous auto accidents, any previous major injuries, and they told me no, so I did not list them.
Okay. Did you ask about comorbidities?
Come back. What did you say again, please?
Did you ask about comorbidities, complicating factors, pre-existing conditions, degenerative changes, previous imaging, the previous treatment?
No, because they had not expressed anything of any previous injuries or any major significant medical issues previously. Whatsoever. I asked them that, and upon an answer of no, I just, did not put anything down concerning that because it's not relevant here to the auto accident. They had no previous medical injuries.
Okay, well then, two questions. First question is the absence of a comorbidity or history of injury a relevant factor to an acute auto accident?
I asked them about that, if they had any.
That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking you, if, in general terms, is the absence of any complications relative, does the absence of any pre-existing complications or history of injury or comorbidity have an impact upon the prognosis of the recovery of a motor vehicle accident victim?
If they had previously had injuries and things, yes, it would affect, you know, their ability to heal and to get back to a complete medical stationary status. But they had no type of previous injuries or any type of medical conditions that would affect their prognosis to reach a, I believe, a 90% medically stationary status. From
I understand what you've just said, Doctor. I understood it the first time you said it to me, but that's not what I'm asking you. Does the absence of those factors positively, does the absence of any comorbidity have an impact upon how quickly the patient is going to recover? Is it not correct that a patient with no pre-existing conditions or comorbidities or so forth would have a greater, better prognosis for a rapid recovery?
Yes, sir, they would.
Okay. So that's point number one. Point number two is you apparently asked the question but did not record in your document anywhere that you asked the question and that it was answered. Is that correct?
That would be correct, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. And I noticed also in your records that you gave both, this patient printed sheet labeled everyday stretches, and then you wrote on it exercises. Do you understand the difference, sir, between a stretch and an exercise?
Yes.
Okay. So which one was it?
Exercises. These were exercises that were performed. The ones that were circled,
okay.
I went through, I showed the patient how to do these, and I prescribed these exercises to be done here on a daily basis.
Okay, good for you. Did you ever reevaluate this patient during the course of the nearly 3 months of care?
Yes, I did, and let me explain the purpose of that answer. Every one of my daily SOAP progress note sheets is an evaluation that's done, because there's subjective findings, there's objective findings, and then there are the procedures and techniques that are performed. So I'm asking the patient their symptoms every day, what's going on with them in the mid-back, low-back, hip. And then I'm asking them to give me a rating of their pain level, where they're at, what's going on. And then I go ahead and I perform different tests on the patient, palpable percussed tenderness. I'm asking them when I'm pushing, probing, or palpating where they're having, if any myospasms, if they're having any pain. Plus, I'm also going ahead and having the patient do a simple cervical neck rotation and also a lumbar flexion extension, and then noting the major decrease levels of what would be a normal range of motion, along with the level of pain they might be expressing upon, such as like lumbar flexion here.
And that's every visit.
Come back. What did you say again?
That occurs every visit. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir. That occurs every visit.
So then it would be your stipulation that each and every one of your daily SOAP notes that rises to the level of an evaluation and management code. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, A, I didn't see any of that in your record, and B, if that's what occurred, why didn't you bill for an evaluation and management code?
I don't bill for that because it's part of the actual patient care that I give. Because how am I going to know how to treat a patient? Every visit is a special visit with a patient. It's highly specific. What needs to be adjusted from my subjective, my objective findings, that's how I do my adjustments.
I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate the thoroughness with which you you are addressing your patient. But my point is this. It is a standard of care that patients, especially acutely injured patients, be routinely reevaluated on a more comprehensive basis using functional outcome assessments, sometimes taking vitals, doing a more formal reevaluation. What I see in your records is that that was never done with this patient, and the things that you say you do with the patient, it's not that I disbelieve you, but I'm saying to you, A, I can't read your record because it's illegible, and B, I suspect that because there's no room on this form for all of those things to have been done and actually having occurred. So my issue here is one of standard of care. You are entitled to do as much daily routine as you like, but there is a standard of care with regard to what a periodic reevaluation should occur and to what extent that evaluation should happen. And I don't find those in your record, and I'm just commenting on that. And then last point on this particular patient, I note that throughout the course of care, that number on each of the four complaints that you mentioned, what we determined was a visual analog scale number, descended from 8 to 0 at the end of the treatment plan at exactly the same rate. So am I correct in assuming that your records state that all of the patient's complaints recovered at exactly the same rate for each and every visit?
When I ask the patient what is their level of pain or discomfort that they're having, and I'm having them judge it from no pain at level 0 to unbearable pain at level 10, they're telling me each one of these areas that this is what they have going on. And I'm asking individually and specifically, I'm saying, hey, does your cervical neck region hurt as much as your lower back? They're telling me yes. Mid-back hurt as much as your pelvic region? Yes. Or the hip region? So that's what that's done there. And, you know, that's a subjective finding.
I understand that. And we're looking at a course of care. Well, I don't have the exact number of treatments, but it was a $7,600 treatment plan, so it was quite a few number of visits. And I just find it extremely odd, very unusual, to see the four complaints all recover at precisely the same rate and all arrive at 0 at the end of the last visit at the same time. I would find that to be a rarity and quite unusual. And apparently that's just what the patient told you. Is that correct?
That is correct, doctor. And also, the mechanism of injury for both of these patients here was the exact same thing. This was a rear-end car auto accident, doctor. So both the mechanism of injury, both people were in the same car at the same time, same planet, same place, doctor.
Yeah, one of them was a 180-pound male. The other was a 115-pound female as well. And I'm not stipulating that the mechanism of injury was different. I'm finding that it is on the scale of a probability in my 30 years of experience and my experience in reviewing thousands of records, I don't think I've ever seen four complaints recover simultaneously at exactly the same rate of speed on a patient. And so I'm just commenting that I find it unusual. And then what makes me even have greater concern is that when I review AS's chart, I find that the same examination findings, virtually the same examination findings, that is to say, all spinal levels and shoulder levels, tender to palpation, and all of the exams at the top half of your exam column testing positive bilaterally, and all of the ones below that not testing at all, I find all of them to be exactly identical to this patient, in the same bizarre presentation. And then when I look at her recovery rates, I see that she too had four complaints, and that each of those four complaints recovered again at exactly the precise same rate of recovery, and terminated at the end of care. And I find that to be having a probability approaching zero in the real world. And so I'm asking you how on earth you think that could occur.
Well, Doctor, again, the mechanism of injury was the same. It was a rear-end auto accident. They were both in the same car at the same time, the same place. And again, I'm taking what the patients are giving me. I'm asking the patient what's going on, and I'm writing down exactly what the patients are telling me under these subjective findings.
I would say that that's probably acceptable with regard to their subjective complaint, sir, but not with regard to the examination findings. And other than that, I have no further questions.
Okay. In a moment, we're going to push over to the complaint, and I see Ms. Kerr is joining remotely. But let's stick with Dr. Schillerstrom for now. Board members, any other questions for him? Okay. All right. Well, let's move on then to the complainant. We're going to give the complainant an opportunity to provide any additional comments that she would like to make, and I think we need to have her sworn in. I don't think that she's sworn in the first time.
Could you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Okay, Ms. Kerr, you are, I read your lips and I saw your hand up, but I can't hear you, so you need to unmute if you can.
I do, sorry.
Okay. All right. We've heard your testimony in the past, and we've read the materials. Would you like to add some clarity to what you've heard today? Do you have anything you'd like to say?
I would. I would like to also mention both SE and AS had been in prior auto accidents. I realize that that's, you know, something for them to disclose to the doctor. However, they both were in prior auto accidents. The treatment for both of these, as Dr. Bennett has pointed out, is the exact same. So much so in that even the description where he, the very last note about being medically up to 90%, it's just a name change, and it's exactly the same. We do, as an insurance company, question why Dr. Schillerstrom and the claimants, both AS and SE, were in communication together. We've never seen where an attorney directly reaches out to a treating physician after care is done and to go to his defense. We did receive additionally an email from the attorney after speaking with Dr. Schillerstrom. This actually happened back in August of 2021, advising that they are similar because they were both diagnosed and they were identical, and that he still handwrites everything and therefore elected to forego rewriting the identical info for both. He also was surprised at that point to learn of his suspended license, and he advised his attorney on this date, August 21st, the attorney for the claimants, that he was able to reach somebody at the board who advised there were computer issues and mail issues, and that the suspension was a result of the board losing his application and payment, that he never received anything by phone or mail to advise him of this, and that he would be going to the board today to remedy that problem. He said that the suspension went into effect 7/6/21. Therefore, though this is a technical error, he was in fact licensed when he treated both of these clients slash patients, which I dispute strongly. I don't see how he was licensed, and I don't also understand how you don't understand that your license hasn't been renewed. And if he was making payments to, you know, if that had anything to do with his license, then, you know, he should have been aware of that as well. He should have been in constant communication with the board to know the status of his license. I also we do additionally question the findings regarding the two different patients, the size of both patients, kind of as Dr. Bennett had already pointed out, and we feel that the treatment alone, you know, we've got one with 56 treatments and the other with 55 treatments, all on the exact same day. Some of these occurred on Saturdays as well as holidays. And we as a carrier are questioning the amount of treatment, the days of treatment, and so on.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kerr. Board members, do you have any questions for the complainant? Dr. Bennett, any? Okay, and Ms. Powell. Did we lose Ms. Powell? Okay. All right. So, board members, this is a final call to ask questions before we go into deliberations to make a decision as to whether we want to handle this today or move it through a formal hearing and consider revocation or other means. So, what's your pleasure? Do you have any additional questions? Need any more information on this? Hearing none, this concludes the portion of the formal interview in which the board hears testimony, and the board will now deliberate and decide what we're going to do in this matter. So that means we're done talking to Dr. Schillerstrom for now, and we need to decide what we're going to do. Can I ask staff, wasn't Dr. Schillerstrom revoked in 92 for a similar situation, record keeping or?
Yes.
And the like.
Mm-hmm. And I would ask the board to, to keep that evidence for once you find a violation.
Okay.
But if you want, I mean, I did some looking into what Ms. Kerr just brought up regarding his license. He was suspended. He was on admin suspension. And just for historical purposes, the board has always taken the stance that your license is your responsibility. It's not board's responsibility to notify you. From what I can tell, he was properly noticed in regards to the renewal. Concerning the length of time he's had his license, that should be standard process in terms of that. And so he was practicing while on a suspended license from our process perspective.
Yep.
So. Can I be heard on that issue? Because that issue was raised back in August, and that was resolved. That issue was resolved with the board back in August. We received Mr. License. He was reinstated effective the day of the application. So that issue has been resolved before the board.
Okay. We're deliberating now, Mr. Greer, and so we're done taking testimony. All right. So what's your pleasure? We need to adopt. If you think this rises to disciplinary action, then you need to adopt findings of fact and then appropriate conclusions of law. I've heard you say today that we have serious record keeping and billing concern. We did have a violation of the board order. Even though he paid it, he created his own terms of payment. We need to acknowledge that. And that's not okay. And so are there any other concerns regarding the allegations that are listed for improper billing? We've got to be able to maintain records on those two patients, practicing on a suspended license, the violation of the board order, non-professional conduct.
Mr. Chairman, I, for the purposes of discussion, 32-924A23 states intentionally misrepresenting or omitting a material fact from the patient or third-party payer concerning charges, services, appliances, test equipment, and x-ray examination or other procedures offered or provided. In a situation like this, it's with the egregious nature of the record keeping, it's almost impossible to tell really what has gone on, but it is clear, in my mind at least, unless these two highly anomalous patients are precisely the two that one would ever occur in a lifetime, that there is misrepresentation here, and it cannot be otherwise than intentional. And so I believe that has to be put on the record as something that moves more into a disciplinary mode than just a corrective, documentation record keeping issue. Now, where we end up in terms of, I guess we have to come up with the findings of fact relative to this, and so I would stipulate that that's a fact that relative to 32-924A23.
And that is for improper billing?
I think that it's misrepresenting material fact from the patient's record. It's one could almost argue that making an illegible record is misrepresentation, but then when we are able to determine kind of what seems to have happened and he corroborates the same thing, I feel like that's gone beyond some minor record keeping issue.
Okay, so board members, we need to adopt findings of fact and specific conclusions of law before we deliberate as to what we're going to do and what's appropriate.
You don't mind if we could just take them one at a time and let me know what allegation you believe, and what fact supports that allegation, and then the conclusion, and we'll handle the conclusions of law after.
Okay.
So I would propose as one finding of fact the violation of R 79214, failing to timely comply with board subpoena in accordance with that language, as evidenced by the obvious facts that we've established during the course of this investigation. not complying with agreed upon repayment.
Yep.
The specific requirements that Dr. Schulstrom agreed to and then did not follow through.
Okay, thank you.
I would submit that there's a violation of fact or a violation of law for R79025, failing to create an adequate patient record, which has been stipulated to basically by Dr. Schulstrom and which has been verified during the course of this investigation.
And what were some of the things that were lacking that you found in those records?
Specific and sufficient record keeping details relative to the examination outcome, omissions relative to record keeping regarding evaluation and management of the patient, and many others.
Perfect. Thank you.
What else? Add patient history.
And patient history, yes, please.
We have 1 and 5.
One, five, and four. That's misrepresenting.
Yeah. Okay. So 1, 5, and 4.
Yes. And we've got 5 already.
And then practicing on a suspended license. Is allegation number 3. And then also allegation number 2 is failing to maintain records.
No, number 2 was on compliance with the board subpoena.
So there's 2 cases, and I think we're...
Sorry.
So for case 2020-036, related to the non-compliance with the board order issue. And we had non-compliance with the board order. We had non-compliance with the subpoena as an allegation, failure to complete the continuing education, and then the practicing on a suspended license. And some of those overflow into case 2022-002, which is the one where we talked about specifically records. And those allegations were improper billing, failing to maintain patient records, practicing on a suspended license, and violating a board order. And then also on professional conduct.
Perfect.
Who's going to make the motion for this?
So moved.
Any?
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, and just for the record, I believe we've lost Ms. Powell, so that's four of us out of five. Okay, so we've adopted our findings of facts or allegations, and now we can adopt the conclusions of law as listed in the order or in the
in the investigatory report. Yeah, I think that's fine. They're laid out appropriately.
Okay, so we'll need a motion for that.
Yep. Yeah, motion to accept the conclusions of law as they're laid out in the board's investigatory.
I'll second.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Are there any opposed? Okay, so we've got four present ayes and Ms. Powell is absent. Okay, so now that we've done that, now we can decide what's appropriate here. I'm wondering for discussion if a psychological evaluation of some type is warranted. I agree. It's completely egregious to have two sets of patient records that are so near identical, and for him to testify today that that's exactly what happened is just either a lie or there's something wrong and he might need more help. And so those are my thoughts, and I agree with the other things that we talked about. I think at least a probationary order with record audits and the usual things that we do, probably 1 to 2 years on that. But it's not all about me. So what do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, my concern with issuing a probationary order is just extending what has happened since last time we extended a probationary order is we get bits and pieces of it completed not in a timely manner. And it just draws the whole thing out, and we have to add additional complaints and start to merge cases. So that's the only thing.
Do you think this rises to revocation and should go to a formal hearing?
I would again bring up the issue of recidivism. As we discussed earlier today, this is not the first time this has happened. We are aware that when there's a repeat offense of the same nature, the probability of yet another repeat offense is significantly higher. It does lead to a suspicion that there's some issue with ethics and boundaries. And for that reason, I'm not sure if a psych evaluation or an EBAS would be an appropriate requirement as well.
And if the board does want some kind of evaluation, I would recommend that you continue the formal interview and order it as an interim order, and that way you'll have those results and come back.
Can you, is it appropriate now to talk about the path? I mean, I am having a hard time wrapping my mind around the possibility that he was revoked in 92 for similar issues. So more than 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and somehow hasn't remediated in that time frame, and now we had just a couple of years ago the same thing come to light, only by accident from Ms. Kerr checking the fee and finding out that he was an unlicensed provider.
Mm-hmm.
So this type of behavior could have been going on for 30 years. So what do we know about 1992 and the revocation back then? While you're pulling that up, any other thoughts on that? Do we really think that he can remediate himself into being to fix this? If he hasn't already.
Yeah, and again, speaking just in terms of As we address cases as a general rule, when we have how a doctor responds to the investigatory process, whether they are completely cooperative and recalcitrant with regard to errors in their ways, and on the other end, completely the opposite and, attempting to use political influence to sway the actions of this board to get the heat off of them and so forth, those give rise to questions that, again, caused me to wonder about what we've got going on here. And so I do believe that I don't, where I'm sort of wondering is, again, that same issue is this a psyche ballot or is this an ethics and boundaries issue? Or if not that, then what else? And what are our options relative to that? And I think that what probably would be best if we today would be to move this to to the next level with an interim order, and then sort of as we revisit this, look at what our options are, perhaps some professional guidance with regard to what our options should be.
So can we move it to a formal hearing with an interim order for the psych eval? We have to do those separately.
Yep.
So we have to get more information before we're ready to go to formal hearing.
Yep.
Just for the record, back when his license was issued, part of the requirement was that he obtain a psychological review from a court-appointed psychologist. He was to continue care and counseling by psychologists and must submit monthly reports to the board. He was only to bill through an independent billing service and could only practice under the on-site supervision of a board-approved monitor.
That's when he was relicensed after his revocation in 92.
Mm-hmm.
When was he relicensed? What year was that?
That was...
It looks like that was in 2000.
So he had about 8 years off. He got his license back.
Mm-hmm. And then he was under probation in 2003 and then again in 2019.
But does the probationary agreement have anything to do with what's before the board right now?
He is, or his duly in, let's see. Here's where his license was revoked. Sorry, these aren't in order of the database. Between November 12, 1986, and November 30, 1987, he was licensed to practice during this time period. Him or his authorized agent submitted false insurance claims to insurance companies that represented services performed. And his license was revoked in 1992.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
What were the nature of the other issues later?
2003. 2003, found in the matter of 5 patients, he billed for services that were not rendered, failed to create and maintain patient records that complied with the standard of law, misrepresented that he had met the continuing education requirements for 2002, license renewal when he had not and knowingly made false statements to the board investigator and the deputy director regarding the location and availability of patient records and the response to his subpoena.
Last part of that feels similar to the record request portion of what we're dealing with today.
So my feeling is we don't even need a psychological evaluation. For whatever reason, he's had this pattern of behavior that's gone on for 3 decades. And I think we should move to formal hearing and consider revocation.
I agree and so move.
Okay.
I'll second. Would the board like to offer a consent agreement for voluntary surrender in lieu of formal hearing? Part of that motion?
Yes.
Okay. Any further discussion, board members? Okay. Hearing none, I'm going to call for the question. We need a roll call vote. Or no?
Dr. Guarino?
Aye.
Dr. Bennett?
Aye.
Dr. Knopf?
Aye.
Ms. Powell?
Aye.
Never joined, but okay. Mr. Turbinson?
Aye.
Okay. So we had 5 ayes in favor of moving to a formal hearing. Dr. Schillerstrom, you've heard what we've decided, and you'll be contacted and invited to the formal hearing.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board.
Okay. All right. It's 10:55. We haven't taken a break yet, so we're going to take a 10-minute break to do it, and everybody meet back here around 11:05. Okay, the time is now 11:05. We are back in open session. Ms. Powell, are you?
She's not back yet.
Okay. Run
number five, right?
Five. Yeah. Hello, Ms. Powell.
Here she comes.
We got a view of your shorts. There you go. Ms. Powell, you can hear us? Since evaluation and did you get the results from that? I don't think we have those in our materials if you did, and that's why I'm just asking if you've already done that as part of what you've been through.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I submitted those in previous disclosures to the board.
Okay. Okay, do you have anything you want to say before my board members have some questions for you?
Well, I first would like to renew my request for postponement, as I'm not here with counsel today.
Right.
My attorney is now a ALJ judge, and he just got response from his presiding that he'd rather him not sit here with me, so I haven't been able to obtain counsel since, but I'm here and willing to answer any questions.
Okay. Well, you were properly noticed, and you did have the opportunity to acquire counsel by now. We're in the initial stages of our investigation with your case, so we're going to ask you some questions, and if we need to bring it back another day, we will. Okay. All right. So, board members, do you have any questions? I think we had a problem with not reporting. There were a couple of DUI arrests, one in 2017 and I think one in 2019. You're aware that you need to submit that information to us within 10 days?
I am aware.
Okay. And that allows us to kind of monitor and make sure that you're complying with all of the things you're supposed to be complying with the county or the state or whoever, you're on probation with. And you are currently on probation with the Dreamy Draw Court until 3/21 of 24, correct?
Correct.
Okay. All right. So, board members, any questions?
I think there's also an issue in 2006 that went unreported to the board as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, if I may clarify, 2006 was I disclosed the DUI on my annual renewal. I was licensed in 99. And at that time, there wasn't a regulation to report within 10 days. And so that subsequently changed, and I was not aware of the duty to report within 10 days in 2006. So I reported incorrectly in the annual renewal. Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Bennett, Dr. Cohen. Just by way of date, 2019 referral fee record says that your fee was paid on the last day of December 2019. Is that correct? And is it your statement that you were not aware at that time that the DUI charges had been filed against you on September the 19th?
That is correct. I was arrested in January of 2019, which I disclosed to the board, and then those charges were dismissed without prejudice. And I was not made aware that the state refiled until January of 2020, when I happened to go to Dreamy Draw and make a payment, and they told me I better go down the hall and talk to them about it. So I was, to answer your question, no, was not aware.
that the state had refiled.
Isn't it the state's responsibility to inform you?
Serve me. Yes, they're required to serve me.
And you're saying they did not?
That's correct.
May I ask just a legal question?
Sure. Do you want to go in executive session for that, or are you?
No,
okay.
I just didn't want to change protocol here in the middle of talking to Dr. Cohen, but I have a question for our attorney. Does the law require that charges that were dismissed be reported?
It just requires that if you are formally charged, you report. If you're arrested, no. If you're formally charged under 3206, you do have to let the board know once those formal charges have been made.
Okay, so it's your responsibility to, if you're charged, regardless of whether they're dismissed or not?
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I just want to make sure of that.
And in justice court, sometimes you may not always get notice. They do tell you on the website to check if you've had any issues and check often, because they have, I believe, up to 75 days to file the charges.
Thank you. So with regard to this event that occurred on January 31st, 2019, 32 o'clock at 108?
Correct.
While impaired, was this in a residential area or near a school crossing, or where was it?
This is on the interstate, I-51. It was not. To answer your question, no. It was not in a school zone or crossing.
I know it seems an odd question, but the language is kind of particular in terms of those kinds of facts. And are you currently practicing?
No, sir.
So what happens at the office address at 5062 North 19th Avenue?
However, I do cover periodically when a physician at that particular location or others needs a day off or is called in sick, I have made myself available to as a cover doc.
And how is that not practicing?
And you're right. Excuse me. So, no, you're right. That's practicing periodically. You're right.
Okay. All right. And just for the record, you made the comment that you were not actively practicing at the time of the situation. You are aware that if you have a license, you're responsible whether you're practicing or not.
You're yes.
Aware of that. Okay. I have no further questions.
Okay, so where are you at with your most recent DUI was in 2019?
Correct.
And so you're abstaining from alcohol, period. Are you doing random screening now?
I am.
And how often do you do that?
Daily. Oh, well, I'm...
Whenever they call you in.
Well, I... Daily, submissions for alcohol testing and random weekly oral saliva testing.
Is that like an at-home box that you use?
SoberLink.
Yeah.
SoberLink.
Okay.
Yeah. I volunteered that, and I have been sober for quite some time, but I'm currently being tested, correct?
Okay. So, board members, what we have done in the past has changed over the years, but we used to have some type of probationary order that would allow us to monitor him and make sure that he's compliant and with that mirrors the Dreamy Draw probationary period. And I think that we're kind of getting away from that. What is the new legislation and diversionary programs and?
I don't believe that passed requiring diversionary programs.
Okay.
No. Next year.
Okay.
And I believe that the I can't advise on it. Obviously, it's not law.
Yeah.
But I believe the intent was so that the boards would create a program that could be offered under certain circumstances.
Right.
But I believe one of the requirements is it needed to be a self-report, not a...
Okay, finding out
so, yeah,
third-hand or...
So if they would self-report, yeah, it would be a confidential program that they could enter in.
I'm okay. Curious, may I ask
yeah.
a question? The current monitoring program that you're engaged with at this time, does it, what is the end date on that?
There's no end date, in fact.
All right, and you...
I suppose I could cancel it whenever, sorry. I could cancel it with it whenever, but given my goals, and I don't see canceling it today.
Do you mind elucidating about what your goals are? And-
sure. It's important for me to abstain from drinking alcohol forever. So... the longer that I am sober, the greater chance that I can meet that goal. And I would have to agree with that data, as well as the extensive counseling that I've submitted to with Dr. Buwalda. I believe I submitted.
I saw that.
I have learned quite a bit about my behavior, past behaviors, and that's just not something that I want in my life. Things have been much better since I've stopped. So this is a tool that helps me remain accountable to my family and to myself, and also could be to the board as well.
Okay. So, board members, what's your pleasure? Do you want to... move it to a formal interview where we would have to create a probationary status for him, or do you feel like this is not something that crept into his practice and made him a danger to the public? Or I mean, we've got the other issues of just not reporting, which could be handled with an order of some type.
The board at this point too, you could offer a consent agreement if the respondent would be willing to sign it. That would allow you to just monitored, would memorialize what he's already doing and allow you to monitor that. To you.
Yeah, that's actually kind of what I was thinking about, that it was something where we would offer a consent agreement volunteering to, over a probationary period of, say, 2 years, to continue the self-monitoring and perhaps quarterly reports to the board. Is that something like
that? Absolutely. And you could even have it terminate on the termination of his probation if he successfully completed it.
That sounds like a reasonable path to me.
I agree. I'm just thinking about like the time of 2 years. Can we accomplish it in a year rather than two?
That was my first thought. My second thought, especially after hearing Dr. Cohen, is that I'd like to help him. I think that in a sense, having, Dr. Cohen is obviously committed and engaged in recognizing that it's a narrow path that can be fallen off of easily. And if being on probation had a consequence that would continue to help him be on that path, I would have a tendency to lean towards 2 years, only for that reason.
Well, it's not our mission to, our mission is to protect the public, so I guess that helps protect the public. We're not here to protect Dr. Cohen.
Well, I think we also protect the public for an extra year, too.
Yes.
if there was an issue with recidivism after a year, it would not have been a violation of probation, and it would have to come up as a new complaint and so on and so forth. I don't care. One or the other.
Dr. Bennett, if it is a year and he does not comply, then it would be a violation. With his probation, the court would be a violation of his board order. So it wouldn't be a new complaint. It would just start the hearing.
I would be amenable one way or the other, right?
Okay.
I feel more comfortable with a year just because I haven't seen it creep into the patient.
Hopefully,
maybe
we could ask if you'd be amenable.
Yeah, are you agreeable to what we just discussed?
I am agreeable to that. I would ask you to consider an alternative method of testing three times a day. I think that there are alternative methods.
If I understood,
that's pretty. It's invasive. I'm doing it for many reasons. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I understand that. But if I understand Dr. Bennett's proposal, it would be a quarterly report on whatever testing was accomplished in that time period.
Moon, unfortunately, do any other testing.
So not in addition to, it would just be you having your probation officer report to the board quarterly what occurred.
So I would be reporting. I don't share that. I do not. I do this for myself, and so I would share it with you. Is that my understanding? And just continue things as they are. I would be open to that.
Okay. So so if the board makes that decision today, then you would be able to review that with your attorney, and you'd be able to decide if it's something that you're willing to sign, and otherwise it comes back before us and we go through it again.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
The only thing with it being more of an elective program is there's not set parameters like there typically is with programs that are put on by an individual by a court. So I don't know if there's stipulations in there. I mean, to his point, he's on a certain frequency now, but there's nothing to say that he couldn't reduce the frequency since it's an elective program.
Right.
And you are required under your probation to abstain from alcohol?
No longer.
What requirements are under your probation?
Not to drink alcohol to excess and to be a law-abiding citizen.
Okay. I think the point is he's already going through it, and the board is trying to make sure that they monitor his progress going through it. So it's up to you whether you want to put new or other terms to that agreement.
Yeah, I think it's 1 year probationary period, in the terms of his current probation order.
Yeah,
like we.
Yeah, but I don't think he has any. He doesn't have anything. Normally, there's random drug screening that's mandated and all. He doesn't have any that he's doing it on his own.
I would be open to an order that would
agree to
an order for sober link testing at the same frequency if that is agreeable.
Along with complete abstinence from alcohol?
Correct.
Okay. Someone want to make a motion to offer a consent agreement?
I'll make the motion to offer a consent agreement for a 1 year probationary period to include random drug and alcohol screening. I don't know what the interval would be typically.
Well, it says the interval that, would you say 3?
So, twice oral testing, random weekly.
Yeah.
And then daily SoberLink alcohol testing.
And does the board feel they need both of those?
I feel like the daily SoberLink testing.
Yeah. I imagine it generates a report too. Okay. There you go.
I could add you to the list, and it would go straight from there to you if you like.
Okay. Anything else in the motion?
If not adhered to, we would move to formal interview.
Yeah. And the matter will, the agreement will mirror, the terms will also mirror the terms of his probation, correct?
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Dr. Bennett, second in. Any further discussion?
You're not going to add us so they receive it every day, right? Is that what you're wanting? Daily? I don't think we.
No.
I think quarterly reporting.
Okay. Good point.
Just
good
point. Take all the quarterly.
We can hire another staff member to keep track of that. Okay. Are those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Are there any opposed? And Ms. Powell, you're in favor, correct?
Yes, I said aye. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, you got five ayes, Seth. You've heard what we've decided today, so you'll be receiving a letter in the mail that clears all that up for you and also offers the consent agreement.
Thanks very much.
All right, Kevin. Okay, tab number six is the matter of Joseph Greer.
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Greer. Can you announce yourself for the record? Your name?
I am Joseph Greer, D.C.
Okay, and are you represented by counsel today?
No.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Vanderbeen, can you give me a brief?
Yes, making false statements and procuring a license by fraud or misrepresentation.
Okay. Board members, any questions for Dr. Greer?
Can we get a statement for the record on where we are with regard to the compliance? There, this has been a pretty complex journey, and I'd like to just kind of have it on a record in terms
sure,
of
absolutely. Dr. Greer was before you previously as a whether to open. And in that was the fact that he submitted his continuing education for his probation as his continuing education for his renewal, which the board order was specific in that the 12 hours of additional continuing education was an addition to his renewal. When we asked for some additional clarification, he provided some more certificates. However, one of the courses was a documentation course, and he took the documentation course, the same course, twice within 2 months. So there has been numerous kind of administration concerns. And during that time, under the what happened at the last meeting, the board kind of determined that he hadn't met the requirements for renewal, so therefore his license was put on absent suspension pending him completing those additional hours. He did complete the additional hours and paid a $200 late fee, and his license was restored back to his probation status, however, being on probation, one of the violations of the board order is renewing timely. So there's that piece of it. So in that he's compliant, the one thing he had for his other probationary agreement was that was outstanding was the payment for the civil penalty, and from what I understand from Ryan, we did get notice that he emailed that he had sent that payment in because it was due. It's due the 21st of this month. So that would finalize everything in terms of the previous probation and the order for Cintra.
And you'll receive that today, certified mail.
Okay. So, I think in the past we may have discussed an interim order for fitness to practice for him. I think there's just been a lot of confusion around our meetings with him and discussing with him, and I think it would be a good call to know from another professional what his cognitive abilities are at this point. So those are my thoughts.
Mr. Chairman, I'm afraid that I have to agree with you. During the course of the multiple times Dr. Greer has been before us recently, and unfortunately, he seems to have a very poor grasp of what has transpired, not really have his thoughts have not been organized. His note record keeping that we've looked at has shown signs of significant flaws that we've already dealt with in terms of board issues. And for me, the tipping point has been when we ordered a course, he took the same course, you know, within 3 months and did not recognize that he had taken that course that he just took. So I agree. I think that we need, for everyone's benefit here, to determine if in fact, he's able to adequately function as a physician.
Great.
I'm wondering as to what our options are in terms of, this would be like a non-disciplinary interim order?
Yes, it would. It would be for investigatory purposes. And it would be best, well, you could move it forward, but it would be best to keep it at this stage, at the initial stage, and request that interim or order that interim court, excuse me.
Under 924C?
Yes, 924C.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Dr. Greer before we decide what to do? Make a motion.
If not, Mr. Chairman, I would move that consistent with 924C, we issue a non-disciplinary interim order for investigatory purposes for a fitness to practice evaluation for Dr. Greer.
Is there a second?
I second the motion. Second the motion.
Ms. Powell. We got it, Ms. Powell. You're the second. Is there any further discussion?
And wait, how soon would you like that? Within 90 days?
Yes, please.
Okay, within 90 days. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, Ms. Powell, we had a time delay again, so I'm just going to clarify you are in favor. Okay, I got a head nod. Okay. All right, Dr. Greer, that concludes your tab for today, and you'll be instructed in writing what you need to do from here, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, let's go on to tab number 8 with Dr. James Pfeiffer.
Just for clarification, Dr. Pfeiffer was not able to be here today, but I think we can proceed without him based on the information we have.
Okay. Can I get a board brief?
Use of drugs or alcohol. But I would like to point out just to the board, we brought this because he disclosed it on his renewal appropriately, as he should have. When we went back and reviewed everything, he disclosed it earlier, as he should have within the 10 days. He disclosed it properly on his renewal in 2001. But the board staff never brought it to your attention to look over and investigate. And since then, he's been compliant with all of the probationary orders. So kind of bringing it to you, and he's compliant, but that's just, it should have been brought to you earlier back in 2020, sorry.
So it appears that he did nothing wrong.
No, he was completely compliant with everything that we would have required, and then he was compliant with his probation.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I move we take no action on this.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second.
Any further discussion? Further discussion? Okay. Those in favor of taking no action signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, the ayes have it. We'll take no action on tab number 7. No, number 8. Okay, we're moving on now. We've handled 9 and 10 already, and we are going to number 11. Dr. Roger Fuller. Hi, welcome. I'd like you to introduce your name into our record for our audio recording.
Dr. Roger R. Fuller.
Thank you. Ms. Vanderbeam.
Dr. Fuller is requesting relief from his probation. He was on probation for 4 years. He was to abstain from alcohol. He was provided the board with all copies of court-reported drug and alcohol screening reports, and he was paid the cost of investigation of $500 within 3 months. He satisfied all of the terms of his probation, and he did not request early release, and he could have.
Okay, great. Thanks for complying with everything as you were supposed to. That is confidence inspiring. Do you have anything you'd like to say to the board?
No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
Learning, good learning experience, an eye-opener, a wake-up call, and all I can do is pass it on to other people that make the mistakes.
Right.
Yeah. In a lot of ways.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, any questions?
Move to terminate probation and restore him to full status.
Okay. For a second. Okay. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time and fairness.
All right, let's go on to tab number 12 under licensure, Evan Singalore.
He has submitted his application for licensure by examination and his PMMTP certificate. He answered question to number 36, which is a conviction or plea that was sealed or expunged. He was charged with disorderly conduct. I just want to bring to your attention that when we ran his background check, that did flag that all of the information provided in the documents matched his statement as well as what was flagged in the background check. But these charges were dismissed.
Okay, Dr. Pingalore, are you present? If you are, you need to unmute so we can ask you a few questions. Dr. Pingalore, going twice. Okay. Board members, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we grant licensure with upon payment of all appropriate dues and things.
I'll second.
Okay, I've got a second by Dr. Knopf, first by Dr. Bennett. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, licensure will be granted. And we are on to meeting minutes, tab number 13. Okay, let's go through page by page. Page one, this is for June 1st, 2022. Page two. Page three. Page four. Page five. Page six. Just lost my internet connection. Give me a second. Yeah, about page seven. Page eight. Okay, I lost my connection again. So how many pages do we have? Do you guys have any connections or any corrections?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, on page 12, line 10, it says, however, any one member of the board, that should be two words, not one. Anyone should be two words, not one.
Yep.
Okay. I did have a correction on page 10.
Okay.
I believe it's tab 11, Greg Bidlock. It's just the case number is wrong. It should be 2020-035. It was copied from the one above it.
Thank you.
On page 9, is it Dr. Sturmertz or Sturmertz?
It should be Sturmertz.
Okay. Any other corrections, board members? Okay. Is there a motion to approve as amended? Okay. We got a first by Dr. Bennett. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, second by Dr. Knopf. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The ayes have it. When you go back and you try to do your meeting minutes, like, you're not going to know that she's time delayed. You're going to maybe think she was here. And so that was five of us in favor of that one.
Got it.
I need to wait a little bit long, Ms. Powell, because we're just catching you a little bit late. Okay, let's move on to the budget report and executive director's report.
I do not have a financial report for this month because it's end of the year, so there's a little bit of a lag getting that report, but I will tell you that we came out with excess funds, which is how we purchased our new laptops. We did do some enhancements for board staff. They all got standing desks to kind of enhance that work environment for their health. We were able to do some of those things, and then we were able to pay for the Centia database, which we started that process, and then we've also started the process of digitizing all of the licensing files. So that will be completed next year. So those will all be electronic, plus we'll move to the database, with the goal of being live in the database probably like mid-September, end of September, prior to renewals. And we've had our first look at the portal. It looks fantastic. It's a web page. You can log in there. You'll have a portal where you'll be able to access your information, update your address. You'll be able to request the mailing list, your license, everything from there. So that will be a huge relief in terms of work levels for staff. We won't be having to manage all those various forms. There'll be a business entity login for all the business entities. They'll just be able to log in and renewal for their certificates, all of that from that single portal for applicants. The application as it comes in, they'll be able to add documents, save progress, and so we'll never get an incomplete application. It will all be complete.
Get that so, taken care of.
That's all exciting news there. So in that regard, I don't have a financial report, but I can report that we are in a good financial place. So, and in addition to that, when the budget went through from the governor's office, included in that was a 10% pay increase for all staff. The staff got a 10% raise that's effective as of the 28th of this month.
Board members too?
No, not board members. Sorry.
We're talking
staff.
Big bucks here.
I know. And then in terms of board meeting action items, I wanted to bring to your attention initially Dr. Sablotnick was scheduled to come back before you for a formal hearing, but on Friday, after much good work by our investigator, Mr. Dominic, he was able to track him down and get him to sign that consent agreement. So as of Monday, that agreement went into effect, and we're monitoring it closely to make sure it's compliant. So,
good job.
We got that done. So, pending cases, as you can see, the number is starting to dwindle. And thanks to the consent agreement today with MAR, that will close out all of 2018. And I believe now we'll be done with 2019. No, 2019 is eager. It's still on hold, but we're getting closer to those really old cases. That was kind of the last really old case that we needed to deal with. So we didn't have any other opens on this agenda. We did get 5 complaints since the last meeting, and we've closed out between what you've done on the agenda and then some administrative closures that we've done. We've closed out 14 since the last meeting.
So
we have 21 cases that are over the 180 days, so we're getting there. And then in terms of my leader standard work, you'll notice that I've added weekly Ventia project meetings, so getting them all of our data and all of our forms and walking through our statutes and stuff with them, that's occurring weekly now. I'm working with, like, where I need Ryan for the complaints and Connie for licensing. We're working in tandem to have those conversations with them. On track, everything that we should have reported to the governor's office has been reported, so we're good there.
I'm having trouble imagining, like, how much work is involved in transferring a database or multiple databases into this. Like, how many, what is that like?
So a lot of it, what they've done is they've taken our forms and our applications, and just based on the information contained in that, they start building those questions into the database, and then we're working with our database consultant to kind of pull out that data into workable chunks for them to upload it in, and then we are probably going to have to do some level of cleanup to that data, and so we're kind of working through that.
And so what do you see the relicensing process being like, the renewal process? Like, how much time is going to be saved?
Well,
I mean, because you're going to be getting completed, you're going to get the whole thing, right? You're going to have the payment, everything is going to be there. So how much more staff work will be involved in that?
I think it depends. We have two paths, and I haven't decided which path yet we're going to take. There is one path that if everything is absolutely correct and they don't answer yes to any of the declarations and they have their CEs and all of that is correct, the system can automatically approve those renewals and we wouldn't even have to touch them.
Good.
So there's that option, or we can still go through and look at them, but either way, I would say we're probably looking at a 50% staff savings.
Okay.
May I interrupt briefly only because Angela's texting me, Ms. Powell's texting me saying that she can't, she's having trouble logging in, and she's asking if she can call in.
Yes, we can give her the, Ryan, can you send her the?
I'm just told this is. Yes.
So we'll send her the call-in information. Oh, the other thing I didn't report out to you is we are completely caught up with all of our SINBAD reporting and all our MPDB reporting. So all actions from the store have been reported to both entities now. We're caught up and not behind on that anymore.
Are we good on our FCLD registration?
Yes. Yep, those are paid annually. They're all paid for. We're all cut up on invoicing, everything like that. So.
Budget has been good to us this year. We also have the access bill passed.
Good. That's
very good news.
That is great news. Great news. The other item that I have in front of you. In my document is I was, as part of your statutory requirements, we are to adopt our meeting calendar for the next year. So I provided you with my proposal, which would be that we maintain the 45 days, but we would be more consistent on doing it Wednesday. And we would potentially, since I wasn't beholden to a boardroom, we would either be in A or C, and then continue with obviously the virtual option. So there would be no board meetings in February, May, August, and November, and then we would just be meeting those other months, and it would be on a Wednesday if you're open to that option.
Fine by me. Any conflicts?
The return of Wednesday.
Yeah, I think it'll be better to have it on a consistent day.
Yep.
I agree, because I work from home on Tuesdays. So.
I totally did not take Seamus' schedule and doing that. So to be on the record.
So do I see that there is a 3-month gap?
No, they go. They go top to
bottom.
I did the same thing when I looked at it. Yeah.
Or horizontal instead of vertical. I'm reading like we do in America.
I couldn't find another calendar.
All right, we're good.
Okay, so do we need a motion to approve the calendar?
We need a motion to approve the calendar.
Oh, Mitch, make a motion.
I'll move to approve the calendar.
Okay, got a second by Dr. Bennett. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Ms. Powell's in favor.
Yes.
Okay. Does that conclude your report?
That concludes my report.
Okay. Time for the annual election of board officers. So let's start with chair. Are there any nominations for chair for the board?
Move that Dr. Guarino serve as chairman of the board.
Okay. Are there any other nominations for chair of the board? Going twice. Any other nominations? Three times. Okay, then by acclamation, I'll be chairman of the board for the next year. And let's move on to vice chair. Are there any nominations for vice chairman?
Yes, I'd like to nominate Dr. Wayne Bennett for vice chair.
Okay, Dr. Wayne Bennett, is there another nomination? Any other nominations going twice? Any other nominations going three times? Okay. Well, congratulations, Dr. Bennett. By acclamation, you will be vice chair for the next year.
And to you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Well, that would be cool.
Okay. That was not controversial. About the call to the public, this is your chance. You can say whatever you want. I like to let the introverts go first because the extroverts always get all the attention. So anybody in our physical audience or virtual audience, you can say whatever you want. It's not meant to be a two-way conversation. It's just your way to get on the record and tell us what you thought about the meeting if you choose to. But we can't reply to any questions you might have. So, anyone? Okay. Well, then this meeting is adjourned at 11:51.
Well done.
Thank you.
Okay.